This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You are listening to The Morning Run. It's 6 a.m. on Friday, the 8th of April, or Fri-yay, as we like to say, as I like to say. I'm Shazana Mokhtar. I'm in studio with Kusu Chuang and Tan Chen Lee.
Morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Both of you girls, good? All right?
Yeah. Absolutely. We're on the cusp of another weekend. What's not to love? What is not to love, I ask?
Absolutely.
I love Absolutely. Weekends.
Well, we have a lot lined up on the show today, a lot of interesting discussions in our docket, on our docket. At 7:15, it's now or never. That's the dire warning coming from the latest UN IPCC report on climate change. We're going to discuss the key takeaways and what Malaysia needs to do to address climate change risks with Darshan Joshi of ISIS Malaysia.
And then at 7:30, we find out who's likely to succeed Carrie Lam as the chief executive of Hong Kong and reflect on her legacy in office with Hong Kong political commentator Sonny Lowe.
Then at 7:45, we find out what about the business confidence index from companies. We talk to the RAM rating economist Wong Kai Jack on their findings.
All right, so lots of things on store for you today. All this and more on The Morning Run. Stay tuned here, BFM 89.9. That was the Fleet Foxes with Ragged Wood. If you've been working yourself ragged this week, we hope that the weekend provides you some respite. We're The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mokhtar with Kusu Chuang and Tan Chen Lee. 6:06 in the morning on Friday, the 8th of April. Now, my friends, do you remember those halcyon days when we went out of the house without a face mask?
Oh, yeah, man.
There was such moments.
Loved it.
I can't remember anymore.
Actually, I've stopped going out of the house with a mask. Face mask. I shouldn't say that, should I? But I am.
Well, actually, if you're going out to exercise or you're going into nature, you know, as long as you're in an open space, face masks aren't strictly necessary anymore. But I think for the most part, for those of us who still work in offices, perhaps, who do our grocery shopping, those masks have become very ubiquitous. And it just, for me, it feels like a very vague sense of it's a long ago time when we actually went out without having to worry about having a face mask on. But with the reopening of international borders, do you think that we're ready to return to some of that pre-pandemic living?
For me, we're actually talking about this article from The Cut, which is a recent study for the National Bureau of Economic Research in the US, it was found out that 13% of people plan to not return to pre-COVID activities. And this is actually driven mostly by anxiety, specifically social anxiety and health anxiety, because some people are afraid to make changes and afraid of re-entering society. How interesting is that?
Yeah.
13% is a fairly small number, though.
Yeah. It's still quite a lot, though, Shaz. Yeah, 1 out of every 10. I think so. You just imagine that people are dying to get back to the streets and to go out, right? But 1 in 10 people are still at home, masked up, you know, paranoid of going out. So my sense is that if you were already quite a socially anxious person before the pandemic would have just amplified that personality that you have. And if you're an extrovert, like some people, you know, it would have just amplified that as well. You would have gone on YouTube, started a channel, you know, done all kinds of things. Pantomimes at home with your children.
TikTok.
You know, that kind of stuff. My mum's on TikTok. Can you imagine? It's incredible.
Your mum's on TikTok.
I know. It's ridiculous, right?
I am in her camp, auntie. Yes.
Do you know what I mean? So I'm not surprised that people are still at home.
Yeah,
I think my aunt is still at home. She hasn't gone out at all. She's about 100 years old now, but
What is her concern? Is it because of
catching it? And
I think those who are more vulnerable to infections, I think they, of course, would try to, I think, maintain some kind of physical or social distancing. Those who are immunocompromised, those who haven't been able to get the vaccine for various reasons, I think they still have good reason to want to continue with steps like masking and physical distancing, you know, because they're just at more risk if the virus infects them. And the virus is still out there, even though we see a crowded Pasar Ramadans now, we see crowded shopping malls again. The fact of the matter is infections are still taking place and we should still be wary of and ensuring that we follow the SOPs as much as we can.
I think the real concern here is what social and business norms that became commonplace during COVID have now extended into normalcy, which to me is very concerning. And some of it is positive. For example, working from home, not making the commute to office. To me, that is a positive thing because it gives you a little bit more balance if you're able to find that balance. What is not so good is this social anxiety thing, which, you know, reduces your social interaction, which is no good because all humans are social creatures and we need that social interaction.
And surprisingly, in Japan, the habit of wearing masks started even before COVID happens, right? I mean, we all know that last time when we visit Japan, you see people in masks and all that. And it's not just because it's a compact space and they want to protect them, you know, because it's not so much for health reasons. There are some people who wears it for social distancing purpose. When I say social distancing, it's because they don't have to smile or react to people when someone greet them or, you know, they just want to have that space to themselves.
So at the risk of overgeneralizing countries and nations and people, I would venture to say, and I'm going to get flagellated for this, right?
You're getting ready, you're bracing yourself, but you're still doing it.
The Japanese, yes, I'm still, I mean, I'm, you know, I'm this age, I'm going to do what I'm going to do, right? But the Japanese generally were already quite a, let's just say, an eccentric society before the pandemic hit. Let's just put it that way, right? A society where they're able to come out with money and pay people for hugs for an hour and lie down in, you know, dark rooms. And that's what they do, right? By way of contrast, I don't know, maybe the Polynesians are not. They're very social creatures, you know.
Such.
The Japanese are not. And I'm generalizing my way into trouble.
Stereotyping. You are just cherry picking.
Yeah, but facts. You know, it emphasizes what you were before and it just amplifies it.
No, I'm just coming back to what I was saying. So basically, you know, will this, after this pandemic, when we go into endemicity, will we see a surge of more social distancing people who's choosing to wear a mask, for example, just so that they can have their space and continue to have their space?
Maybe. And to be honest, I don't think mask wearing should be made into such a big deal as perhaps it's being made in the US. I really don't understand why we just don't continue with giving people that choice. If they want to wear a mask, wear a mask. If you feel comfortable taking off your mask, okay. But you recognize that you're doing so at risks as well. So yeah, I feel like we can allow that kind of freedom for everyone, no?
And it works both ways. I mean, for societies who are very open and libertarian, if you wear that mask, you might get become a pariah. I remember when in the middle of pandemic, right? And Uncle Roger, you know Uncle Roger? Yeah, he went to Sweden, you know, and he was wearing his mask on public transport. People were saying, why are you wearing a mask? And he was like, because there's a virus that kills you. And, you know, in Sweden, you know what their policy was, right? They're just like, laissez-faire, let things be. And he was, he was ostracized in society. So it works both ways, do you know what I mean?
Perhaps. But maybe I'm hoping that with the pandemic, people just become less, I suppose, wary or less suspicious of people wearing masks. I say live and let live. Let people wear masks if they want to. And in Japan, as you mentioned, where they wear masks not just for health reasons, some people wear it for the cold. And I think it's a fabulous idea because, in cold climates, your face gets so cold, the air hurts you. Cover your face. Why not? Wear that mask if it helps. In any case, tell us what you think. Are you ready to go back to pre-pandemic living? What do you think you'll be wearing face masks still for the foreseeable future? You can WhatsApp us at 01-8789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're heading into some messages. And when we come back, we're going to talk about whether we have an obsession with university rankings. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Japanese Breakfast with their song called Be Sweet.
Does that include raw fish?
Good. I was actually thinking fluffy pancakes, you know? That's my idea of a Japanese breakfast. Or perhaps that stinky bean. Natto.
Oh, yeah.
Natto, right. Well, tell us what you like to have for breakfast. We're The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mokhtar, together with Kusu Chuang and Tan Chen Lee. I'm sorry to those who have just started the fasting day. I'm sorry to be talking about breakfast. In any case, we're turning our attention now to some recent headlines that have come out regarding world university rankings. So, QS World University Rankings recently released their latest list based by subject, and Malaysian universities appear to have done pretty well. So there are a number of subjects in which Malaysian universities have featured, namely in business and management studies, computer science and information systems, engineering, electrical and electronic engineering, mechanical, aeronautical and manufacturing, and medicine. So in all these categories, our universities have ranked in that list, which is being celebrated in our local news media portals.
I'm going to suspend my disbelief and give them the benefit of the doubt that they've improved. Which I'm pretty sure in real life they haven't, but call me old-fashioned, call me cynical. But
so I want to use this news headline to, I suppose, bring you guys into a discussion on how useful university rankings are. we like rankings, right? We like coming out number one. We always like it when we come out in the top 10 of whatever rankings. But in the bigger scheme of things, do you think that rankings actually help improve the quality of higher education systems? Or are, do they actually hinder what universities are supposed to be doing for society?
It's a quantitative metric, which persuades universities or institutions to do better within the institution. The danger is if you go beyond it and rely too much on it as a university itself or as parents yourselves in assessing your children's placement, then it becomes a problem. It should be a data point, not the data point.
But you can't help but acknowledge that rankings matter, right? It's what parents and students do look at when they make a decision. So on my part, I think in deciding which university I went to before, I did... seem to matter where it came out in the rankings, oftentimes because you don't have the time to really delve into what a university does. You just want to see, oh, how is its reputation? Oh, okay, top 15, not so bad.
I did exactly the same. I would go through the ranking and stuff like that to choose my university back in the days. But at this point in my life, I actually think that ranking is not so important. And I'm a little bit different. I don't think that I need to push my children to be number one in the class and go to number one university. I want to focus more on the quality of the education and also what they become of it, and not so much chasing after rankings and positions and things like that.
In doing that, wouldn't you still send your child to a university that had a good reputation ranking-wise?
It depends on what he or she choose. So I don't really want to have any dictation over that. And if the kids say that, I don't want to go to school yet, I want to do something else, by all means, go ahead.
I've got a very radical view of education. I think it's being disrupted. I think it hasn't evolved as fast as the real world. I think they're going to get disrupted in a big way. I think three-year degree programs are ossified, antiquated, expensive, and out of touch with reality. These are issues I raised with Southampton University and Nottingham University, to which both provosts in both cases had, you know, vigorous objections, as they would. I think that the real world today requires you to have skills-based learning, 6 months, 12 months, and then you get your job, and then it's a lifetime of learning. I think that's more relevant. I think the Western institutions are being left behind by the Asian economic revolution. I want my children to go to university in maybe China or Taiwan because this is where the future is.
And it doesn't matter where they're ranked in the world rankings,
no,
I suppose.
No, because rankings are also very provincial in the way they're quantified. I mean, for example, QS is Quaccarelli Simons. That's a Western institution. The Times University ranking is also British. Would they know? With a quantifiable degree, how Beijing or Jinhua or Xinjiang University, for that matter, I don't think they would, right?
But that doesn't... How to say... Okay, fine. I take your point that you may want to send your kids to an Asian university, but how, in that sense, should universities be assessed? What kind of outcome are we judging universities by in order to determine whether they're doing a good job or not? Because the problem with these rankings and these KPIs that come with the rankings, a lot of people who work in the system, they do feel that they are being restricted by them, that the focus of the higher-ups in universities isn't on for perhaps student fulfillment or student educational targets, but really, oh, how many papers have you produced? Oh, how many international students do we have in the university?
Yeah.
So it's these very surface, very superficial indicators that they're focused on, which doesn't help student educational attainment overall.
And there's so many different types of ranking. Which one that we really can refer to, right?
Correct. So as a parent myself, what do I want for my children? I want them to be able to learn very practical skills in a fast changing workforce. I want them to be very well placed in the economic system of things, which is why, you know, China would be interesting, Taiwan would be interesting. I think that if you went to MIT, okay, there's a very strong distinction about the rest of the universities and the top 10. So your Imperials, your Cambridge, your Oxfords, your Harvards, your Yales, those top LSE, those top 10. If you get into those top 10, you die, you cut off your leg, you send your kid there. Okay, the rest of the universities, they have become commodities.
Well, tell us what you think. How important are university rankings in deciding how you think about university? You know, do you think they're important? Are we in Malaysia too obsessed with them? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're heading now into the 6:30 a.m. news bulletin. And when we come back, we look at international headlines. Here is Bob Dylan, who's going to take you to the news bulletin with Where Are You Tonight? BFM 89.9. Bruce Springsteen with Fire. You're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana Chuang and Chen Li. It's 6:40 in the morning on Friday, the 8th of April. It's that time of the morning where we take a look at what's making headlines around the world. Chuang, you are so eager to start this. Tell me what's caught your eye this morning.
Tiger Woods is back. That's what the news is.
He is.
The U.S. Masters has begun in earnest, the August, no pun intended, golf tournament. And Woods is one under, so he's just a few strokes off the pace. He's at T10, tied for 10th. South Korea's Sung Jae-im is top of the leaderboard right now with 5 under, with 17 holes played.
So Tiger Woods has been absent from playing for a long time, right?
Injuries. So he crashed his car in a gully. And cause unknown yet.
But there were big questions on whether he could return. The fact that he's playing now in pretty good form, I mean, that's pretty inspiring, actually.
Fine fettle.
And moving to another sports-related news, which is Boston Marathon, one of the world major marathon, which I definitely want to get in, but I'll never get in. Well, they have banned athletes from Russia and Belarus, previously accepted to compete in this year's marathon. Well, as usual, we know why, because of the war, and this is part of the sanction move, which is a little bit sad, because getting into it is really, really tough, and they have to sanction them.
Speaking of Russia, while we're on this, I want to quickly cover this headline. Russia has been suspended from the Human Rights Council, from the United Nations Human Rights Council, after the General Assembly voted to suspend their membership. So at the General Assembly yesterday, 93 members voted in favor of the diplomatic rebuke, while 24 were against and 54 abstained, while 20 were absent. So although the vote did meet the two-thirds threshold that's required in order for such a motion to pass, the fact that there were so many abstentions, including Malaysia, by the way, as well as absentees, just shows that this is quite a controversial move, because I think to isolate a country diplomatically in this way, it's fairly, not to say unprecedented, but because it's happening to a UN Security Council member, I think it is causing a lot of countries discomfort, and they're just wondering how to position themselves on this. Whether we'll see Russia being diplomatically isolated even more at the UN is something to watch for. There are big questions over whether this is the right move, because if Russia is isolated, how will they engage? We don't know.
Well, given that the US, the UK and France are in the UN Security Council, it makes me think of the phrase, people in glass houses should not throw stones. On the diplomatic front still, I've got some news from that August news organization, China Global Television Network, otherwise known as CGTN. Well, they have they've got a report out, headlined, titled, China to take strong measures if Pelosi visits Taiwan region. And very strong words, because Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Zhao Lijian told reporters in Beijing on Tuesday that if Nancy Pelosi visits Taiwan, China will take very strong measures. The quote is this: if Pelosi visits Taiwan, the move will seriously violate the One China principle and the provisions of the three China-US joint communiques, seriously undermine China's sovereignty and territorial integrity, seriously impact the political foundations of China-US relations, and send serious wrong signals to Taiwan independence separatist forces, adding that the Chinese side has made serious representations to the US. I counted 6 words of serious, right?
They are viewing this very seriously.
Very
indeed.
Seriously.
And I suppose to them, it does feel like it's a diplomatic escalation of sorts that such a high-ranking official is visiting Taiwan, although perhaps not so soon, because headlines came overnight that Nancy Pelosi has contracted COVID-19. She's 82, by the way. So this bears watching, I suppose. But yes, things happening on the Taiwan-China front, US front as well.
Coming to a high official, you were saying, so the first black female justice has been appointed, which is Ketanji Brown Jackson. She will take over the seat of Stephen Breyer, who I think he has retired already. So yes, this is the first female black justice as what's been promised by President Biden during his campaign, which is pretty something to watch for.
Interesting, which makes me look at the op-ed on the South China Morning Post front page. It's an editorial stating that the Asian American voice has yet to find a voice on the U.S. Supreme Court following this nomination.
Interesting indeed. I think there is a lot of debate in the U.S. about making their Supreme Court more representative of the people that they're supposed to be deciding cases on. The fact that Ketanji Brown Jackson has been elevated to the court is a great, I think it's a great step forward. She did go through a very tough scrutiny. I'm making up words this morning. She did undergo very tough scrutiny at the committee stage in the Senate.
The fact that it
was actually split fairly in the middle between Democrats and Republicans on that committee, but in the broader Senate, she did manage to get that majority needed.
Yes, 53 versus 47 votes.
It's a little bit interesting. A lot of people might not realize this, but California in America is, I think, majority non-white American now. Latinos, Asian Americans, African Americans, more than 50%.
And the trend is growing across America, actually. There's going to be a point in the not-too-distant future where the white American will become the minority and non-white Americans will be the majority. How that's going to shape policymaking moving forward is something to watch. Very quickly, while we're talking about courts, can I get over to Pakistan? Because the Supreme Court in Pakistan has ruled that the move to block a no-confidence vote in Parliament against Prime Minister Imran Khan has been declared illegal. So Parliament, the Pakistani Parliament, will go to a vote on whether Imran Khan has confidence or not this Saturday. So we'll see what happens from there. Will Pakistan see a new prime minister? Will there be an election? Lots of questions still to look out for. 6:46 in the morning, we're heading into some messages. And when we come back, we'll take a look at local headlines in our newspapers and portals. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. That was Blondie with The Tide Is High. You're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana Chuang and Tan Chen Li. Now, we have a few WhatsApp messages coming in after our conversation during the 6 a.m. Segments, where we discussed firstly masking and whether that's going to be a thing post-pandemic, and also the issue of university rankings. So Stephen Ho wrote in about university rankings. He said, I did choose my university based on ranking, but in the end, it's not the curriculum ranking that matters most, but the thought process that you learn through campus life.
Correcto mundo.
And I absolutely agree with that. A lot of the times in university is where you get to engage with, you know, high thinkers, with thought leaders, and just have those really intellectual debates that you may not see in your day-to-day, and that helps you, I suppose, just develop your personality and your worldview moving forward. So I do think that that's something people should look into when they choose university. On the issue of masking, Jackie wrote in to say, I would continue wearing my mask, especially in the morning when I go to the market. No need to bother with freshening up and can avoid small talk so as not to be recognized.
I like that.
And let's end one more WhatsApp message from Ro, who says, to be honest, we've always had a problem with masks. From the unmasking at the end of Scooby-Doo to our obsession with unmasking Batman and Spider-Man.
Yes, good point.
Relevant indeed, Ro. Very relevant. In any case, we are turning our attention now to what's making headlines in the local newspapers and portals. Who'd like to start us off?
Well, Roger Ng, the Goldman banker, under the cosh for his transgressions for 1MDB, has made RHB Bank the second local lender to for him to initiate legal proceedings against. For he wants access to his money, basically. And Maybank was the first bank that he took proceedings against. So Maybank and RHB are both the local banks that he took action against, which also dovetails with the fact that on page 4 of the HCO brief, they report that EPF has accelerated their selling of local equities in March. And guess what's on top? Maybank has also been sold down by EPF because it's had a bit of a nice run on the share market.
All right, some headlines there.
And this is page 7 on the Star that says Serum Seal by January 1st next year. So no medical mask certification seems to be postponed. Instead of initially slated for July 4th, it will be taking effect January 1st, 2023. And the reason why is because feedback from stakeholders that say that there's a worry that there's the price of masks would increase, but our government assured that this will not happen.
So at the moment, are masks not serum
certification yet?
Oh, really? Okay. I've got ones that are, I think, 5 layers. You know, those KN90, whatever.
KN94. Yeah. 5 layers. F94, KN95.
Something like that. I've got good news. Mata Fair is starting this weekend. Okay, and Malaysia Airlines is offering international travel deals from as low as 600 ringgit, all in return to over 20 destinations, including, drum roll please, London, Sydney, Perth, Seoul, Mumbai, Delhi, Hyderabad, Chennai, and more. So it's good. Yeah, go and check it out. It's going to be online as well.
I was hoping to go to Japan, but oh well, it's not
Japan,
opening yet.
Yeah, you should go. Yeah, why not?
I'm sure there are a lot of people eager to check out those deals. And speaking of tourism, on the Breakfast Grill later today, we're actually continuing our tourism discussion with policymakers and policy implementers in the country. We'll have the Director General of Tourism on the Breakfast Grill at 8 a.m. after the show. Stay tuned for that conversation. We'll find out what they've been up to in the 2 years since tourism was halted during the pandemic and what are their plans now that the borders have reopened.
And on the the front page of New Straits Times, ban kids from bazaars. So children under 12 are still largely unvaccinated, and there's people calling for them to be banned from bazaars because it's dangerous for them. As of Wednesday, children under 12, the vaccination rate is 38.1%, which is still pretty low.
And speaking of children, did you guys read about the four missing foreign divers went missing off Mersing, Johor? Well, one has been found, the Norwegian guy, I think, woman, 35 years old. She was found floating 8:15 a.m. yesterday by a tugboat heading to Thailand from Indonesia. So she obviously been caught by the currents. But three people are still missing. British national Adrian Peter, his 14-year-old son Nathan Renzi, who is a Dutch national, and there's a French woman, Alexia Alexandra, 18 years old. They're going to continue searching for those three people tomorrow. La.
And we hope that they'll be found safe. I wonder what happened.
Currents, yeah. Okay. Inexperience, maybe. Bad weather.
Let's hope that we get good news out of this. Our prayers are for their families and those looking for them. In any case, quickly, we have headlines on the anti-hopping law that has been postponed. Well, the tabling has been postponed. So this was supposed to be tabled on Monday in a special parliamentary sitting. The minister at the Prime Minister's Department, Datuk Sri Wan Junaidi Tuanku Jaafar, has said that more negotiations need to be held and that another special parliamentary sitting will be held to table the anti-hopping bill eventually. I think a lot of discussion still on what's happening, a lot of uncertainty. We'll definitely be covering that in the days ahead. Last quick headline. Anybody want to squeeze
anything
in?
There's been a red double rainbow found, spotted early in the morning, April the 7th. It brightened up the city skyline on a Thursday evening.
Very positive.
Very
news.
Profound, because if we get this anti-hopping bill through, maybe we see brighter skies ahead.
Indeed. 6:56 in the morning. We're heading into the 7 a.m. news bulletin. And then after that, we'll take a look at how global markets closed yesterday and also what are the trends moving markets. Here's the Beatles taking you to the news with a little bit of help from my friends. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.